to another Story Time with Daddy. This is an exciting day. Today, we are going to finish with the last part of Susie and the Ballet Family by Lee Wyndham. I am so excited to see what happens in the story. So let's not wait. Let's go ahead and get started with Chapter 13, With or Without Susie. Mrs. Peters popped Susie into bed immediately and called a doctor. For Susie, the half hour of waiting until the doctor arrived was the longest she had ever spent in her life, and the most worrisome. What would he say? Would she have to stay in bed? "I feel fine," Susie insisted to her mother. "Just fine. May I get up?" "You may not," Mrs. Peter answered. "Please lie quietly." At long last, the doctor came. He was a middle-aged gentleman with twinkly brown eyes. Susie began by eyeing him distrustfully and ended by thinking of him as a perfectly lovely person, very sensible too, because the doctor examined her thoroughly, felt her bump, looked straight into her eyes, and said, "Young lady, what are you doing in bed? You're as well as I am. That bit of tossing about in the ocean didn't do you the least harm." "Oh," Susie cried happily, scarcely able to believe her ears, "then I can dance. Oh, mother, I'm so glad." She began to bounce violently on the bed. "Dance?" The doctor frowned. "What's all that about?" So Mrs. Peters explained. The doctor put a finger to the side of his nose and considered this doubtfully. But finally he said, "Very well, as long as that's tomorrow. Take it easy meanwhile, Susie." "She will," Mrs. Peters promised. "I'll see to that. And tomorrow I'll be going with her to keep an eye on her and help dress the girls." "That's all right then." The doctor approved the arrangement. He patted Susie's head and was gone. Susie wanted to get up and dress at once, but instead Mother made her put on a dressing gown and allowed her to move to the couch in the living room. Later, when Allegra called up to find out how she was, Susie answered the phone. "Thank goodness," Allegra said, when Susie told her she was fine. "I was dreadfully worried about you, dear. Besides," she added, "now that I think of it, I don't know what we would have done for an understudy for you. Take very good care of yourself until the performance time. The show must go on, you know." On Saturday morning, Susie woke up feeling a little stiff and sore, but a few ballet exercises unkinked her muscles. By 10, she and her mother were at the Neptune Palace, fussing over last-minute details like everybody else. Allegra sent them home for lunch. "And a rest for Susie, please," she said, smiling at Mrs. Peters. "Be sure she has only a light supper," she added, "and be back here by 7. We go on at 8:30. How professional it sounded, Susie thought, stealing a glance at her mother, as if she were a really, truly ballet performer already. What a delicious feeling. All at once, she wished Miss Mara had been able to see their Nutcracker performance. She would tell her ballet teacher all about it, of course, but it wouldn't be the same. The hours seemed to crawl, but at last Susie and her mother were on their way to the Neptune Palace. Mr. Peters would follow later, closer to curtain time. The dressing room was fairly mobbed with girls already when they arrived, girls in various stages of dress and undress, and added to them were the mothers, who were to help get them ready for the performance. Susie located her black, red, and gold Spanish costume on the long pipe rack. Then the makeup lady beckoned to her, and soon she was made up for the part. Mrs. Peters helped her into the costume and slippers and zipped her up the back. The headdress was adjusted to cover her blonde hair. When Susie was ready, Mrs. Peters moved on to assist another girl. Susie wandered out backstage. Bob and his father were there, making last-minute checks and placing rosin boxes in each of the wings. "We don't want any of our dancers slipping and taking unscheduled falls," John Marlowe said. "Don't forget to rub your slippers in the rosin powder," he told Susie. "And will you remind the other girls, too?" Then he and Bob went off to change into their costumes. 8 o'clock came, and the musicians drifted into the theater. Susie watched them tuning up through a curtain peephole. The theater was filling up fast. Susie thought she saw her mother and father slip into their seats, but there was such a crowd she could not be sure. Soon the stage was cleared, and promptly at 8:30, Tchaikovsky's lilting music filled the auditorium and drifted backstage through the curtain. The orchestra toned down to a whisper of tinkling sound. Allegra, a shimmering cape wrapped around her costume, slipped out through the curtains. "As you know," she began, "we are about to present an adaptation of the second act of the Nutcracker Ballet. But to those of you who are not familiar with this story, we thought a few words of explanation of the action, which leads up to the second act, might be welcome. The orchestra played a soft accompaniment as she told her story. The first act of The Nutcracker opens with a charming Christmas party held in a comfortable European home. The time is around 1850. It is a large, happy family scene with many relatives and children, and a beautifully decorated Christmas tree. The little daughter of the family, Clara, has been given a toy nutcracker made in the shape of a soldier. After the party is over, all the guests have departed and everyone has gone to bed. Clara steals down to the drawing room to see her favorite toy, the nutcracker, again. Allegra paused to observe the interested faces of the children in the audience turned up to her. "I wish we could have presented the whole ballet for you," she said impulsively, "but we just couldn't. I hope all of you will be able to see it someday." She lowered her voice dramatically and went on with the story. "Clara has never been in the drawing room at night before. It appears much larger, filled with mysterious shadows. The curtains at the windows flutter, and then something strange begins to take place." Through her peephole, Susie could see the children watching Allegra expectantly. The Christmas tree begins to shiver and rise, taller and taller and taller, until the top vanishes from sight. All the toys come to life. Then a troop of mice scurry in and begin to battle with the toy soldiers. Now the Nutcracker comes to life too and leads the soldiers in their fight. The Mouse King almost overcomes him, and it is then that Clara becomes so carried away that she flings her shoe at the Mouse King, and he falls. The toys are victorious. The Nutcracker goes to Clara and thanks her. He bows to her, and as he raises his face to hers, she sees that he is a Nutcracker no longer, but a prince who had been enchanted. By helping him, she has broken the spell. Now the prince takes her by the hand and leads her into fairyland. The walls of the drawing room vanish, and the pair step out into the marvelous kingdom of snow, where a group of sparkling snowflakes perform for them. It is after the snowflake waltz that the second act, which you are about to see, takes place in the kingdom of the Sugar Plum Fairy. So, come with me to fairyland now. Allegra finished, beckoning to the audience as she moved back through the curtains. The orchestra rose to full pitch with the merry whirling notes of the finish of the snowflake waltz, and then the curtains parted to reveal the rosy kingdom of the Sugar Plum Fairy. Chapter 14, Act 2. Now the music changed to a gentle, flowing melody. In the wings, the walnut boat was ready, with April and Charlotte standing in it, one on each side of the little mast, holding on to it. Susie picked a spot from which she could observe everything that went on. As if floating on some magic stream, the boat drifted on to the stage, the ropes and wheels which allowed it to move invisible to the audience. Susie could hear the people clap enthusiastically as the walnut boat vanished in the wings on the right with Clara and her prince. The tinkling melody heralded the arrival of the Sugar Plum Fairy. Her attendants, who were dressed to look like cake decorations, hastened to make her welcome. Allegra danced on stage, radiantly beautiful in her glistening white tutu. It was like spun sugar, a sparkle with jewels. A crown glittered on her sleek black hair. From the wings, Clara and her prince walked towards her. After her gracious greeting, the prince told of his enchantment as a nutcracker in lively pantomime. He described the fierce battle between the mice and the toys, Clara's brave part in it. Allegra smiled and showed her pleasure at the outcome of the prince's adventure. She praised Clara, petting her and making much of her. Then she invited the children to sit at a table laden with all sorts of good things to eat, while the fairy's subjects entertained them. "We'll be on in a minute," Bob whispered in Susie's ear. "Come over to our entrance spot." Susie followed him swiftly, and as the vivacious strains of the Spanish dance introduced them, she and Bob appeared on the stage. Susie experienced a momentary panic when she moved out of the wings, but Bob's hand was steady and reassuring under hers. Soon she was enjoying the dance, and then it was over, and she was back in the wings. "You were fine," Bob said, pressing her hand. "I have to change for my next number, but you have time to watch Dad do his Arabian dance." Susie nodded, her eyes shining and her cheeks pink. She found her favorite spot in the wings and watched as John Marlowe seemed to appear magically on the stage, dressed in a wide black satin trousers with a gold sash and slippers and a scarlet turban. He danced with a brilliant oriental style. The audience applauded loudly, as did Clara and her prince at the back of the stage. The cunning Chinese dance was the next entertainment. Bob was the Chinaman, with Robin Palmer and Margie Richards as the bird-like Chinese ladies who danced attendance on him. The jingly-jangly music was appealing, and so were the girls with their tiny mincing steps and dainty postures. The short dance was very gay. Now came the variation John had written in for April and Charlotte. The Sugar Plum Fairy moved over to talk to them, and then the prince led Clara down from the platform on which they had been sitting to the center of the stage. There they performed a formal dance for the fairy, who clapped and bowed when they were finished. This had given Bob a chance to slip off his Chinese costume and emerge as the candy cane. Followed by a troop of smaller candy canes, he burst out onto the stage in a grand jeté and whirled and leaped about, followed by his small buffoons. They used candy cane hoops in intricate patterns, sweeping them through the air. Bob even jumped through his hoop several times, which was quite difficult, Susie knew. She had to dash then to change into her costume for Dewdrop. It was a pale pink and very close-fitting, with a short ruff to form the tutu about her hips, and strips of silver trim running down the sides of the bodice. A sparkling crown topped her blonde hair, which had been brushed back sleekly close to her head. When Susie returned to the wings, the jolly Mother Ginger, the bonbonniere portrayed by John Marlowe, was already on stage. Mother Ginger actually stood on a platform hidden under her gowns. She had been wheeled in sideways from the wings, Susie knew, because she wore enormous oval hoops to hold out her skirts, under which her hidden 8 small candy children. The front of the top skirt opened like a miniature stage curtain, and out they swarmed to the delight of the audience. They danced and pranced very cutely, then scurried back under the vast skirt again, and Mother Ginger moved majestically sideways out into the wings. The familiar strains of the Waltz of the Flowers were now picked out delicately on a harp. Susie led the other girls on stage and tried to imagine that the soft pink ballet slippers on her feet were boxed-in toe shoes, that she was dancing the roll on her points. Oh, happy day when she would dance on points indeed. The flowers formed their pretty patterns around her. She performed her solo, the pirouettes and the pique tours, the arabesques and the bourrées, and danced off stage with the group. The sound of the audience clapping was like the whooshly washing of the waves out on the beach. The children's parts were over now, except for the gathering in the grand finale. They all crowded in the wings to see the best part of all now, the grand pas-de-deux of the Sugar Plum Fairy and her cavalier. Susie felt as if she were holding her breath through most of the beautiful sustained movements of the adagio. How could Allegra move with such sure delicacy? How could she hold the difficult positions on her points without a quiver? Her partner, John Marlowe, supported her carefully, and with elegant gestures indicated that he, too, marveled at her grace and lightness. When she fell into his ready arms, it was a motion gentle and slow as a feather drifting down. When she leaped to his shoulder, she seemed to float there and perch with no weight at all to her body. Allegra danced a dazzling solo, holding herself like a queen. Then John Marlowe danced his, strong and swift and sure. The audience loved them both. Susie thought she had never heard such tremendous clapping. The finale was like a dream, a rainbow in motion, with all of the fairy subjects bidding Clara and her prince farewell. Now the walnut boat drifted back onto the stage. Clara and the prince stepped into it and sailed away, and the curtains came down. Up and down, with countless curtain calls for everyone. Susie thought the applause for Allegra and John Marlowe and Bob, when they were on together, would really raise the roof of the Neptune Palace right off. The ballet family bowed and bowed. At last, Allegra held up her hands for quiet. In a sincere voice, she told the audience how much she and her family had enjoyed their stay at the Neptune Palace and what fun it had been to dance for the guests every Saturday night, And especially it was fun to create our own version of the Nutcracker for you and your children, she finished. We had problems, lots of them, but there is nothing that a united effort can't overcome. I want you to meet one of my busiest and most faithful helpers, she added. Susie Peters, please. Me? Susie squeaked in the wings. Someone pushed her forward and she found herself in full view of the audience. Allegra beckoned to her and Susie received a fine round of applause. Then the curtains came down for the last time and the performance was over. All at once, Susie had a terrible letdown feeling. Allegra touched her on the shoulder. Come to my dressing room, and when you've finished changing your clothes, she told Susie, and hurry. Susie glanced up at the ballerina. Why hurry now? The show was over. Everything was over. Even the lovely summer. Allegra and Bob and John Marlowe were leaving tomorrow. The thought made Susie feel even more depressed. The Peters family also would pack up during the coming week and return to Ferndale. Why did nice things have to end? Why did one meet such interesting people, only to part from them? Susie already missed every member of the ballet family. Would she ever see them again? Oh, Mother would take her to the Ballet Center Theater in New York to see them dance. But would she ever again meet them face to face as friends? Allegra and John Marlowe and Bob? Susie undressed with slow, numb fingers and hung her costume on the rack with the others. She cold-creamed her face the way the makeup lady had told her to do and wiped off the makeup with tissues. All around her, the other girls were doing the same thing, babbling excitedly. But Susie scarcely heard them. In her everyday clothes at last, and with her hair combed, she slipped out of the girls' dressing room and across the hall. Allegra's door was not quite closed. Susie tapped on it lightly and heard the ballerina call, "Come in!" Susie pushed the door open and stepped inside. At the same moment, a familiar voice cried out, "Surprise, Susie! Surprise!" Susie whirled in that direction. Miss Mara was coming toward her, hands outstretched. Susie could scarcely believe her eyes. "Miss Mara!" she cried in a daze, running to her ballet teacher. I thought you were on Cape Cod." "I was, but I'm not now. I'm here." Miss Mara hugged Susie. "And I've got you to thank for it." "Me?" "Yes, it's all strung with little ifs, but it's so just the same," Miss Mara said. "You see, if you had not come here to spend the summer, and if Allegra had not come here to spend the summer, and if she had not gone to your beach, and if you had not come down just then, well, if all those things had not happened, I would not have just seen a delightful performance in which you did very well, Susie. And I would not have met my dear, dear friend Allegra again." "You do see, don't you?" Miss Mara laughed, and clasping her hands with her teacher's, Susie laughed too. Allegra stepped over and put her arms around both of them. "I've missed Faye for so many years," she said. "And I've missed you," Miss Mara told her. "Our separate jobs kept us so busy, too busy to keep in touch with each other until a certain young lady came into our lives," Allegra said. "So I wrote Faye a letter and mailed it to her Ferndale address, and those nice people at the Ferndale post office forwarded it to her on Cape Cod. Now we're never going to lose touch again." "No, indeed," Miss Mara shook her head. "What's more, I'm going to arrange for the girls from the school to take regular trips to see ballets in New York. And I'm going to get out to Ferndale now and then and visit your ballet school," Allegra told Susie. "Perhaps I'll even help Faye teach an advanced class." "Oh!" Susie shivered ecstatically, flooded with happiness. She looked beyond the ballet teacher and the ballerina to Bob, standing beside his mother's dressing table. Allegra caught the look. "Bob will come too, and my husband, when he's not too busy." "Oh!" Susie breathed the word blissfully. This summer, then, would never be over, she thought. It would go on and on and on. The ballet family would not, after all, turn into summer acquaintances who would drift away and forget her. No, they would become friends to keep. And what could be nicer to know than a ballet family as really, truly friends? And that's the last of this story, Susie and the Ballet Family by Lee Wyndham. Oh man, it's so nice to know that all of Susie's dreams came true. She wanted to do ballet, and she got to. She never even dreamed she would meet Allegra and her family, and she got to, and she got to dance with them. And even the hard stuff with April worked out, and April understood how to be a better person, and everyone was able to get along better. I really like it when stories turn out that way, and I'm so happy for Susie. And I'm glad you got to listen to this story. I love you, sweetie. Good night.